Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicap. And we are listening to the Telegraph Herald from Dubuque for Friday, May 8th. And here I am in the reader seat, Ken, taking off with the top of the fold story. Retail stores to reopen today. For weeks, an eerie quiet has descended on Kennedy Mall in Dubuque. The spread of COVID-19 prompted most non-essential businesses in Iowa to close in late March. They have remained shuttered since. Signs of life began to emerge Thursday, however, as staff members conducted meticulous cleaning procedures and erected signage urging careful and appropriate behavior from customers. Kennedy Mall will reopen today, marking another step in Iowa's accelerating effort to reopen the economy. "We are gratified to be moving forward," said mall spokesman Joe Bell. "We're looking forward to a careful, measured approach to reopening the mall." Retail stores in 22 counties, including Dubuque County, will be allowed to reopen today, albeit with capacity restrictions and other limitations meant to limit the spread of COVID-19. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced eased restrictions for these counties on Wednesday, giving many retailers a short window to gear up for reopening. The relaxed rules also apply to dental offices and fitness centers, though the latter are allowed to have only one patron in at a time by appointment. The 22 counties permitted to reopen such operations today are, by Reynolds' own admission, those which have experienced high or rising numbers of coronavirus cases. 1 week prior, the governor eased restrictions in the other 77 counties, including Clayton, Delaware, Jackson, and Jones counties, emphasizing at that time that COVID-19 cases in these areas were either extremely low or on a downward trajectory. There won't be an immediate return to normalcy at Kennedy Mall. Bell noted that many tenants are wrestling with myriad issues, including creating a safe environment and making sure that they have the necessary inventory and staffing to welcome customers. "Each retailer might have its own circumstances that affect when they open," he said. "I anticipate we will not begin with all of the businesses open, but that number will start to increase day by day." On March 26th, when Reynolds announced the closure of non-essential businesses throughout the state, fewer than 10 COVID-19 cases had been confirmed in Dubuque County. Those numbers have surged since. On Thursday, officials announced 13 more confirmed cases in the county, bringing its total to 175. 1 week prior, there were 102 cases, meaning the county's caseload has grown by more than 70% in the past 7 days. City of Dubuque Public Health Specialist Mary Rose Corrigan made it clear Thursday, the local challenge of COVID-19 still is far from over. "COVID-19 is definitely not behind us, and we have to quit thinking in terms of one peak," she said. "We may have several peaks over the next 6 to 18 months, depending on how the virus is transmitted and how it reacts." She added that it is obvious, based on the numbers, that Dubuque County is still increasing in its caseloads. Corrigan said leaders face a difficult balancing act as they weigh health concerns, economic implications, and political dynamics. "The governor's recent decision to ease business restrictions will not necessarily translate into a return to normalcy at local malls and shops, however." Instead, Corrigan believes consumers themselves will wield the most influence over whether retailers are bustling again soon. "People vote with their feet," she said. "For those who choose to make such shopping trips, certain precautions should be followed, including wearing a face mask." "Wearing a mask decreases the likelihood that you will spread the virus to others," Corrigan said. The governor's decision to reopen retail operations was welcome news for local small business owners. Julie Bursler owns Gotta Have It, a woman's clothing store at 315 Bluff in Dubuque. She estimates sales have been down at least 80% in recent weeks. In the past couple of weeks, the store has taken advantage of one-on-one appointment-based visits that allow customers to enter retail stores and shop. It will not open its doors to the public until some point next week, however. "We are excited, but we are also being cautious," said Bursler. "We are not going to rush into it. I want to be comfortable and have a comfortable transition for my customers. Myriad safety measures have been put in place to create the comfortable shopping atmosphere envisioned by Bursler. Upon reopening, the store's hours will be reduced, and only 10 people, including staff members, will be allowed inside at a time. Employees will wear protective face masks and routinely wipe down common surfaces such as doorknobs and counters. Any clothes tried on but not purchased by patrons will be steamed before they are returned to the shopping floor." Bursler is not fearful of how the store's reopening will impact her personal health. "I am confident my customers will do what's right," she said. "They will take the responsibilities they need to and only get out and go shopping if they are well." After a prolonged closure, she is looking forward to being open for business once again. "I don't feel we can hide forever," she said. "It's time to get the economy rolling." Now we continue with our second front page piece. Schools take different approaches to grading. With their students missing more than 2 months of class, Dubuque Community School leaders didn't want grades to suffer because of the COVID-19 pandemic. They opted to give high school students the chance to improve the grade they had when they left school on March 13th or to receive credit for passing a class without a letter grade attached to it. Since the district closed its school buildings, students have been provided with voluntary enrichment activities, but participation is not required. "We're trying to provide a fair opportunity for all students to be able to achieve at the level that they expect to achieve or aspire to achieve," said Mark Burns, the district's executive director of secondary education. With schools around the area switching to virtual and optional instruction systems during the pandemic, local educators have had to work out ways to grade students for a spring that looks nothing like the ordinary. "Schools have taken different approaches during this unprecedented time. Our overriding premise when we reviewed how we were going to grade was we cannot have a student fail a class based on the situation that life has put them in," said Jim Bobel, superintendent of Platteville, Wisconsin School District. High school students in Dubuque Community Schools have several options when it comes to grades. Officials froze students' semester grades as of March 13th, the last day that students were in class before campuses were closed due to the pandemic. They have the option to keep those grades, or they can work with their teachers to complete late work, resubmit work, or retake exams so they can improve those marks. "We thought it was most fair to the student, and we thought it focused us on making sure that the students had the learning that they needed, that we expected of them through the length of the course that had been taught," Burns said. "It all goes back to, it's about the learning." They also can take courses with a credit, no credit option, in which they receive credit for passing a class, but the course is not included in their GPA. Students in 9th through 11th grades, based on their circumstances, also can receive an incomplete mark on a course and then work to improve their grade in the fall. Officials still are examining how to grade middle school students, Burns said. Elementary school students receive standards-based report cards, which list grade-level standards and the extent to which students have met each of those. Those report cards will end up reflecting what students learned before school closed, said Cindy Steffens, executive director of elementary education. "Standards that teachers didn't have time to assess will be marked as such. We're going to be able to use that information next year to guide our instruction," Stephens said. at Wallard Catholic High School in Dubuque, where students have been receiving required online instruction, they will receive their letter grade at the end of the school year. At that point, they can decide whether they want the letter grade for each class or to receive pass-fail credit, Principal Ron Myers said. It opened up the idea that if this environment they were in was very difficult and it was hard for them to stay on task as well as they would have if they had been here, it still allows them to earn credit with credibility, Myers said. He said that could end up impacting students' GPAs, but that students around the nation all have had their semesters impacted by COVID-19, while businesses and colleges should recognize that. Students are all equally affected by this, Myers said. In Platteville, educators are giving high school students the chance to improve on their grades from the third 9-week period of the school year. Students who had a failing grade at that time were given minimally passing grades to give all students a fair chance at academic success, Bobel said. We did that mainly because we don't know the level of trauma inside our students' homes, he said. Students in pre-kindergarten through 8th grade use a standards-based report card, so their grading has not been as heavily impacted, Bobel said. At East Dubuque, Illinois High School, educators separated out high students' third quarter grades and are tracking fourth quarter grades separately, Principal Darren Sirian, Annie said. Students can use their work in the current quarter to raise their third quarter grades. The grades that students receive in the current quarter reflect the quality of their work, but also weigh the efforts they made to engage in learning while their normal school routine was interrupted, Sirianni said. Students who don't engage in online learning during the last quarter will receive an incomplete grade and will make up the work they missed in the summer or fall. Our final front page piece is preceded by a large picture in the center of the paper with a man masked and gloved sitting in a car looking at us. The caption reads, actually looking at a student, and the caption reads, John Hess, a driver's education instructor with Northeast Iowa Community College, works with Morgan Pierce, 14, of Guttenberg, during a lesson Thursday in the parking lot at Clayton Ridge High School in Guttenberg. And our article is Virus Crisis Prompts Detours in Driver's Education Program. Before Stacy Herman slides behind the wheel to begin her driving exam, she must first pull her mask over her face, yank her gloves over her hands, and make sure she has signed a waiver verifying that she does not have a fever. Finally, after she has completed every step of the protocol, she can drive. Recently, students from Clayton Ridge High School in Guttenberg and Central High School in Elkader finished up the online portion and started moving to the driving portion of their 30 hours of driver education through Northeast Iowa Community College. In pre-pandemic days, the students would have had their parents drop them off at school for in-person instruction to complete the first portion of the course. But instead, the teens were able to hop on the class by opening up their laptops, putting on their headphones, and connecting to the Zoom video call. Although it was driving instructor John Hess's first time teaching the course through Zoom, he made it work. They watched the video, and they will go over some notes and can work in groups, he said. They are at home in their bedroom or living room for the class, but they can grab their phone and chat with their partner for the test. Hess said he delivered driving books to all of his students, and during the Zoom class, he reviews each chapter with his students. It's basically like in a classroom, he said. A lot of kids are comfortable being at home taking the class. Hess said students in Dubuque County also take the class through NICC. He said he planned to teach it in Dubuque later this summer, but already is preparing for it to be all online as well. But right now, students in Dubuque are not able to drive with instructors like Hess, due to the social distancing restrictions that Dubuque County and 21 other counties remain under. And until they can drive with an instructor, students will not be able to receive their driver's permits or licenses, he said. They do their classroom online, but they have to drive 6 hours with an instructor, Hess said. Right now, they wouldn't be able to drive with me in Dubuque. Darcy Doty, Director for Driver and Identification Services at the Iowa Department of Transportation, said students who already completed driver's education and their 6 hours with an instructor can go to the DOT website to fill out an application to receive a paper license through the mail. For students that are turning 16, if they have a permit, they can request to have their license processed remotely, she said. We review that and call the family and make sure they have approved it. Although a few glitches popped up during the Zoom driver's ed class, overall, everything went smoothly, Herman said. I liked it very much because I was going to be on a very tight schedule to get to Guttenberg with extracurricular activities, she said. I think it's very beneficial to people that may struggle in new areas, and they didn't feel like somebody was watching them the whole time. Herman said she is a little bit nervous about the driving portion of the class, but as long as she follows all the safety measures, she thinks it will be all right. I think it's going to be more of a challenge with this whole COVID-19 thing, but as long as we wear the masks and gloves, I don't think it will be too much of a challenge, she said. Like Herman, Brooke Hansel said she was happy that the class was moved online. She lives about 20 minutes away from the campus and said the daily trek would have grown tedious for her parents. I have never taken an online class, but I have already planned to take many of my college classes online, Hansel said. I got to see some of my friends on Zoom and talk to them about this. At West Delaware Community School District, Superintendent Kristen Rickey said students also will sign up to complete a portion of their driving course virtually. Our normal driver's ed teacher will provide instruction as he always does with the same content and standards, but in a virtual setting, she said in an email. Now let's turn to some news from Dubuque and the tri-states. And at the top of the fold, we have Dubuque reports 13 more virus cases. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Thursday's developments included 13 more confirmed cases of COVID-19 were reported in Dubuque County. Its total now stands at 175. That includes 18 cases at Dubuque Specialty Care, a total that did not change Thursday. Jones County saw its total spike by 5 to 30 cases. Jackson County recorded 2 more cases, and Clayton County 1 more, putting their totals at 7 and 19, respectively. Delaware County might have had its first death of someone confirmed to have COVID-19. The latest state figures indicate such a death. However, the daily state reports have routinely misreported the number of confirmed cases in Delaware County over the last week and a half, and county officials have not reported a death yet. Efforts to clear up the confusion Thursday by the Telegraph Herald were unsuccessful, so that death is not listed in the graphic accompanying this story. Statewide, another 655 confirmed cases were reported, pushing Iowa's total to 11,059. There were 12 additional related deaths, raising the toll to 231. The state of Iowa on Thursday also unveiled a new tracking website. It appears to no longer provide county-level figures for the number of people recovered, but it does provide county-level information about the gender, race, and ethnicity breakdowns of confirmed cases. Another feature includes the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in each county. On Thursday, the state was sharing figures from Wednesday that showed 417 people hospitalized statewide. That included 16 in Dubuque County. No one with the coronavirus was hospitalized in Clayton, Delaware, Jackson, or Jones counties. In Wisconsin, one more confirmed case was reported Thursday in Crawford County, meaning the county's total has more than doubled since Tuesday, when 7 cases had been reported. County officials say some, but not all, of the new cases are tied to Prairie Industries in Prairie du Chien. The Wisconsin National Guard reported testing nearly 300 people at the facility on Tuesday. County officials said Thursday that not all of those test results have come back yet. 2 more cases were reported in Grant County. Statewide, another 314 cases were reported. Wisconsin's total is now 9,215. 12 more deaths pushed the total to 374. In Illinois, there were 2,641 new cases, along with 138 additional deaths. The state's totals have climbed to 70,873 cases and 3,111 deaths. Continuing with our Dubuque and Tri-State news, we have in the center a picture of 2 young ladies, hands on hips, standing on a driveway covered in all kinds of chalk figures. And the caption is, Elena Digman, 17, and Paige Wagner, 16, both of Platteville, have worked together on chalk art outside Wagner's home. And our article is, Drawing Confinement Blues Away in Platteville. Their days brimmed with early morning meetings, after-school volleyball practices, and late-night study sessions. A weekend job and prom committee, too. Now, Platteville High School juniors Elena Digman and Paige Wagner can measure the hours they spend drawing and doodling with chalk in the scrapes of their fingertips and intensity of the sunburns on their necks. Literally, if it were not, for this whole stay-at-home thing, we probably would not have done this, said Elena, 17. Although the teens never enrolled in an art class, they have turned to creative expression to drive out the unease that COVID-19 pandemic inspires. We have touched almost every spot of the driveway, said Paige, 16, as she crouched over a bouquet of rainbow balloons, smoothing the lines with a painter's brush. Since classes transitioned to online instruction when the state ordered schools closed in March, they have adjusted to a slower routine shaped by social distancing, home quarantine, and outdoor recreation. Their new habit, sidewalk chalk, was nurtured by the city. With assistance from a donor, Platteville Parks and Recreation Department acquired 500 boxes in April and is providing them to residents at no charge. I think everyone in this new reality is trying to find out what is our role in this, said Luke Peters, department director. We are looking for alternative forms of programming that we can do and encourage while people are maintaining social distances. Platteville native Larry Trine recently returned to the city from Florida with his elderly parents to shelter in place. They lived in homes across the street from each other in The Villages, a retirement community northwest of Orlando. Waiting out the pandemic would be safer in rural Wisconsin, they decided, so they jumped in a car and made the 1,200-mile road trip in one sitting. Later, while walking through Platteville's Smith Park, Trine observed luminescent chalk drawings on the sidewalks. One was a rainbow, and it said, "You are not alone," he said. Another one said, "Stand here and think of someone you love." It would be great if this was all over town, Trine thought. He contacted the city with an idea to hand out chalk to any resident who asked. Staff members have delivered about 100 boxes. For every box the city distributes, Trine will donate $1 to Platteville Food Pantry. Parents have embraced Platteville Driveway Doodles program. It was nice to have something to look forward to. Come to our door, said Amanda Witzig, a donor service associate at University of Wisconsin-Platteville. The family is making the best of sheltering in place. 4-year-old Thea is as sassy as ever while Colin, 8, misses attending school. He likes drawing puppies, and his favorite color is blue, but he doesn't draw blue dogs. With the fat, dusty sticks, he creates big lines. I feel like I'm an artist, Colin said. Next, we have United Way drops a donation to Boy Scouts. A Dubuque-based Boy Scouts of America Council seeks new funding after learning it will not receive funding from the local United Way this year. Northeast Iowa Council Scout leaders said they have partnered with United Way of Dubuque Area Tri-States for nearly 100 years. United Way contributed more than $50,000 to their council last year. It is something we were absolutely hoping for, said Ann Hudick, Scout Executive and CEO of the council. It does create additional stress for us. United Way officials said the decision was a result of their new funding model and a smaller pool of money being available due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Certainly, the Scouts still serve a valuable role in our community, and we're grateful that they're here for people, said Danielle Peterson, president and CEO of the local United Way. But unfortunately, due to our restrictions and the scoring and ranking that we had to do, we weren't able to bring them on this year. Last week, the United Way announced it was awarding $850,000 to 31 local nonprofits, including 9 new ones. 51 groups applied. The organization allocated $1 million in grants to 35 local programs in 2019. Peterson said this was the first year that United Way of Dubuque Area Tri-States awarded grants through a fully competitive process. That means officials raised the bar for nonprofits to demonstrate the impacts of their programs in the areas of health, education, and income stability. Unfortunately for the Scouts, their grant application scores and their outcomes, the outcomes are tied to the score, didn't fall within the range where people would be receiving allocated funding, Peterson said. The Boy Scouts Council had asked for $78,000 to help fund after-school programming for at-risk youth, for the Exploring Program, and for overall programming, Hudak said. The council serves all of Alamakee, Clayton, Delaware, and Dubuque counties, as well as Bellevue, Iowa, and East Dubuque, Illinois. The lack of funding from United Way adds to financial stresses caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, she said. The council's board of directors is looking at alternative plans and partnerships to find revenue so they can offer the same level of programming or more. They would like to try to at least replace the funding that the council received from United Way last year, Hudak said. That's a pretty big stretch goal in this climate, she said. For any organization to say their organization is staying where it was last year is a pretty lofty goal. So that would be an excellent, excellent place to be. And from the sidebar of the page, we have a few pieces of news in brief. 90-year-old woman loses $16,900 in phone scam. Police said a 90-year-old Dubuque woman lost $16,000 as a result of a scam involving a caller posing as her grandson. The theft was reported Wednesday. A press release states that a caller posing as the woman's grandson said he was involved in a crash in the Chicago area and required money to settle court costs. The woman was instructed to withdraw $16,900 from her bank account, place the money in a shoebox, and take it to a local UPS store where a shipping label was prepared and waiting for her, according to the release. When the woman received a call requesting an additional $22,000 and went to withdraw additional money, her bank became suspicious and stopped her. Next, police. Intoxicated driver crashes during chase. Police said an intoxicated driver led officers on a high-speed chase in Dubuque on Wednesday before crashing into a utility pole. Dennis J. Handelman, 37, no permanent address, was arrested at 6.06 p.m. Wednesday in the area of East 27th and White Streets on charges of eluding and third offense operating while intoxicated. He also was issued 13 traffic citations. Court documents released Thursday state that an officer pulled over Handelman for traffic infractions near Elm and East 21st Streets. But as the officer approached the driver's side door, the vehicle sped away. Handelman ran a red light at Elm and East 20th Streets. Handelman's vehicle was traveling faster than 57 miles an hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone on Elm, according to documents. He turned onto Washington Street, ran stop signs at its intersections with East 18th and 19th Streets, and drove the wrong way through a roundabout. The vehicle then turned into an alley between Jackson and Washington Streets and traveled north at a high rate of speed. Police called off the pursuit for safety reasons. Officers then located the vehicle after Handelman was traveling north on White Street and crashed into a utility pole at its intersection with East 27th Street. Handelman fled on foot and was located on a porch at a residence in the 2600 block of Central Avenue, police said. And our last piece on the page, police. Video shows woman targeting man with vehicle. Police said a woman was arrested Thursday after nearly hitting a man with her vehicle last weekend in Dubuque. Kenendra R. Harris, 30, of 355 and a half Klingenberg Terrace, was arrested at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging assault while displaying a weapon and fourth-degree criminal mischief. Harris also was cited with failure to have a valid driver's license. Court documents state that Harris tried to hit Derek D. Trawick, 37, of 1028 Walnut Street, at about 4:20 p.m. Saturday in the 1000 block of Wilson Avenue. Trawick told police that after Harris tried to hit him with the vehicle, she continued north on Wilson Avenue, stopped, turned around, and passed him while throwing a can of air freshener at his vehicle, causing about $500 worth of damage to the rear bumper. Trawick recorded the incident and turned the video over to police. Documents state that the video shows Harris nearly striking Trawick with her vehicle. Now we turn to our opinion page and our view, the editorial opinion that reflects the consensus of the Telegraph Herald editorial board. And today we have pandemic expands social problems. Unprecedented, historic, in uncharted waters. Those are the descriptors used when we talk about the COVID-19 pandemic and the impact it has had on public and private entities and individuals. Certainly, researchers will study the realms of healthcare and government response to a health crisis and learn from this period in history for years and decades to come. But the issues to be scrutinized in a post-pandemic world stretch far beyond the needs of public health. Many social issues that were identified as problems before the impact of COVID-19 have been exacerbated in this new normal. Housing issues that have long been discussed in the city of Dubuque rise to a new level of concern in this pandemic. Members of the Dubuque branch of the NAACP believe minorities, renters, and low-income individuals will feel the impacts of this period far beyond others. The group has called for the city to fill a vacant assistant housing director position, despite a city hiring freeze, to hire a consultant to develop a housing discrimination index, and move forward with fair housing testing, and to set a deadline for an education, outreach, and rebranding effort to encourage greater participation in the city's housing voucher program by landlords. Those requests come at a time when the city is facing its own COVID-19 ramifications, namely a $16 million drop in revenue. For those people who work in essential employment, a lack of childcare options can stymie the ability to work. Childcare has long been an issue in the Dubuque region, and the pandemic has only made matters worse. Data from the Iowa Department of Human Services shows that about 1,000 registered childcare centers have shut down since mid-March, and officials are concerned some of them won't reopen. That could further increase unemployment. Food insecurity has posed a critical challenge during the pandemic, particularly for the old and the young. With the absence of school-supplied breakfasts and lunches, the community has scrambled to fill the void, particularly in low-income areas where the vast majority of students receive free and reduced meals. Local nonprofits stepped up to help supply meals to elderly people normally served by senior meal sites. It's clear that the effects of COVID-19 are felt most harshly by the most vulnerable populations. Already, we can see that the economic impacts of the virus are being borne disproportionately by impoverished people. The lessons of COVID-19 will inform future generations on myriad public health issues and the handling of a pandemic. But this period also exposes other vulnerabilities in our communities, problems we knew existed that grew into bigger problems. City, county, state, and federal officials must seek ways to address these social problems so as not to further expand issues of housing discrimination, child care, food insecurity, and other issues in the long term. And I would say amen to that. And now we have a few letters to the editor. This is IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I'm reading from the Telegraph Herald, Friday, May 8th, and it's Ken in the driver's seat. Now, back to our letters to the editor. Our first one, facts about politicians' comments leading to this point, from Jim Buddy, 415th Avenue, Bellevue. In response to Jess Green's letter of April 15th, Mr. Green said President Trump knew about COVID-19 back in November. He also said many deaths could have been prevented if Trump did his job. Point one, December 31st, the Chinese government first reported the discovery of a new respiratory virus to the World Health Organization, WHO. Point two, January 14, WHO tells people it found no transmission of the virus between humans. Point three, January 23rd, WHO says it's still too early to declare a public health emergency. Point four, January 31, when Trump announced that travel ban, Joe Biden said this is no time for Trump's record of hysterical xenophobia and fear-mongering to lead the way instead of science. He was also called a racist by some media and Democrats. Soon after that, Speaker Pelosi was trying to get Congress to stop Trump's travel ban. Point five, February 24th. Pelosi went to Chinatown in San Francisco and told people, "Come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're again careful, safe. Come and join us." Point number six, February 29th. Dr. Fauci said Americans didn't need to change their behavior patterns. Point number seven, March 2nd. Mayor de Blasio tweeted, "Get out on the town despite coronavirus." Point number eight, March 8th. Governor Cuomo said this virus a situation you should not fear. Point number nine, April 14th. Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat, Connecticut, said it isn't what China or WHO did, it is what Trump, who didn't take the thing seriously. Our next letter, Van Milligan endorsement by counsel suspect, from Rich Trausch, Bradley Street, Dubuque. The Dubuque City Council meets behind closed doors to prop up the city manager's job and then refuses to release the information to the Telegraph Herald. What is right with this picture? They are obviously trying to hide or cover up something. Rick Jones was right about one thing. This is garbage. Why would the city council have to even do something like this if Van Milligan is doing such a good job? The whole thing looks like a tactic to draw attention away from Van Milligan and make the problem go away. I would have fired Van Milligan in the early 2000s if I would have had the say-so. A man should answer for the things he has done. And our third and final letter, reopening post-pandemic poses challenge, from Gary Reed, St. Cecilia Street, Dubuque. Rebuilding lives from the pandemic will be a challenge. Although we got a late start in attacking the virus, we are now in the position of placing people, economics, and politics against one another. Are we going to listen to medicine and science or politics? The president designated a three-phase program based on 2 weeks between phases to rebuild in a safe way. But when states began reopening, not one state met that criteria. I hope we are taking the necessary precautions, unlike what I see on the southern and western beaches, to protect our citizens so that one day we may again enjoy the freedoms and privileges we once had. We now continue with today's obituaries. Jeffrey G. Kotz. Jeff Kotz, age 55, of Dubuque, was called home peacefully at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, May 5th, at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital. To celebrate Jeff's life, private family services will be held because of the current gathering restrictions due to COVID-19. A celebration of Jeff's life for all of his family and friends will be held at a later date. Burial will be in Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is in charge of arrangements. Jeff was born October 1st, 1964, in Dubuque, Iowa, son of Gerald and Muriel Gilligan Kotz. Jeff graduated from Dubuque Senior High School, class of 1983. He was united in marriage to the love of his life, Teresa Yeager, on July 30th, 1988, at the Dubuque Arboretum, and they renewed their vows on April 30th, 2016, at the Hotel Julian. Jeff was a hard worker and was employed with several places throughout the years, including the Dubuque Inn as a bellman, FDL Foods, the Lucky Joe Bar at the Diamond Joe, the Freezer Plant in East Dubuque, Key City Transport as a truck driver, and lastly, part-time for Enterprise Rental Car as a driver. In his free time, Jeff loved to bartend at Randy's Hilltop, where he could put his gift of gab to good use interacting with the regulars. He was a diehard Redskins fan, and Kevin Harvick was his favorite NASCAR driver. Jeff also enjoyed drawing and photography and has created several beautiful pictures throughout the years. Everyone who knew him knew that Jeff had a great love of the big cats, with tigers being his favorite. Jeff especially looked forward to spending time in the great outdoors playing frisbee with his beloved dog, Peanut. He was a longtime member of the Metropolitan Lodge, number 449 AF&M, and the Oxus Grotto. We are truly brokenhearted at losing our beloved husband, brother, uncle, and brother-in-law in our daily lives at such a young age. We love you, Jeff, and we'll miss you more than words can ever truly express, and look forward to the next time we are together laughing in the purple rain. Memorials will be accepted by the family to be distributed among his favorite charities. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Peter A. Wilberding, Greencastle, Pennsylvania. Peter A. Wilberding, Greencastle, Pennsylvania, passed away March 2nd. A memorial service in celebration of his life will be postponed until a later date. When a new date is available, it will be posted on the website of Miller Bowersox Funeral Home at www.bowersox funeralhomes.com. Carol A. Erickson, Galena. Carol Ann Erickson, 85, of Galena, died May 6th at Sunset Park Place, Dubuque. Arrangements are pending at Furlong Funeral Home. Janet M. Winter Kenyon. Janet May Kennedy Winter Kenyon, age 74, of Dubuque, was called home peacefully at 7:15 a.m. Sunday, May 3rd, at home, surrounded by her loving family. To celebrate Janet's life, there will be a celebration of her life held at a later date. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is in charge of arrangements. Janet was born on December 13, 1945, in Dubuque, daughter of Francis M. and Laverne Jasper Kennedy. Janet was a lifelong resident of Dubuque and graduated from Wallard High School, class of 1964. She married William R. Winter on September 9, 1967, in Dubuque, and they were blessed with two children. Janet later married William T. Kenyon on October 2, 2017, in Dubuque. He preceded her in death December 23, 2018. Janet was employed in the bindery as a collator operator at William C. Brown Publishing in Dubuque for 39 years until her retirement in 2011. When she was able, she enjoyed spending time socializing with her family and friends or watching a Green Bay Packers game. Janet enjoyed spending weekends on the river with her family at their cabin in East Dubuque or working in her garden. She was a member of the Leaky Lodge at the Grand Tap. Janet was a gentle and selfless person who was always there with a kind word or a pat on the back. She was an amazing and strong mother, grandmother, wife, sister, friend, and caregiver who could light up a room with her smile, a look, or a witty sense of humor. Memorials will be accepted by the family to be distributed among Janet's favorite charities. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. Mary Jane A. Fenton, Cascade. Mary Jane A. Fenton, 93, of Cascade, Iowa, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, May 6th at Shady Rest Care Center in Cascade. Because of the unprecedented conditions in our country right now due to the COVID-19 virus, private family visitation will be held for Mary Jane on Saturday. Private family burial will also be held at Calvary Cemetery with Reverend Douglas Loki presiding. A celebration of life for Mary Jane will be held at a later date to be announced. Anyone interested in sending memorials may send them to Rife Funeral Home, attention Mary Jane Felton Family, P.O. 430, Cascade, Iowa, 52033. She was born October 6, 1926, in Worthington, Iowa, daughter of Nicholas and Mary Krogman Lair. She received her education in the rural Brooks County School. On January 16, 1947, she was united in marriage to Joseph C. Felton at the Immaculate Conception Church in Sand Springs, Iowa. He preceded her in death July 16, 2001. She was a member of St. Matthias Parish in Cascade, Iowa. Mary Jane was a past president of the Cascade Legion Auxiliary from 1993 to 1995. Online condolences may be sent to the family at www.rifefuneralhomeinc.com. Leon Hoth, St. Olaf. Leon Hoth, 84, of St. Olaf, Iowa, died Wednesday, May 6th at Mercy One in Elkader, Iowa. Due to state and federal guidance on gatherings due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the family will not be having a public memorial at this time. A private graveside service will be held. Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Elkader, Iowa, is assisting the family. Judith A. Menadou. Judith Ann Judy Menadou, 65, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away May 5th at Mercy One Medical Center. No public visitation or service will be held. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. A full obituary will be published in Sunday's edition of the Telegraph Herald. And we have on the page several little bits and pieces that I'll share with you. The Jackson County Rodeo is postponed. From Bellevue, organizers have postponed the 2020 Jackson County Pro Rodeo. The 33rd annual event now will be held on September 10th to 12th at Bellevue Horsemen's Club. It originally was slated for June 18 to 20. Boil advisory lifted for 200 residents in Dubuque. I don't know if any of my listeners were part of that, but officials have lifted a boil advisory issued Monday night for about 200 residents near Gay Park in Dubuque. And everything is okay there. Q Casino postpones Nelly other concerts. A Dubuque casino this week announced that all of its concerts through mid-June were either canceled or postponed. Q Casino and Hotel closed March 16th just ahead of restrictions imposed in relation to the COVID-19 pandemic and has been shut since. The announcement states that concerts, both the Q Showroom and the outdoor backwater stage, are impacted. Those shows include a May 29th concert featuring rapper Nelly, which has been postponed. It has not been rescheduled yet. All but one county-run campground to open today. Dubuque County Conservation announced Thursday that all but one county-owned campground will open today. Swiss Valley Campground is expected to open on Friday, May 15th. In an announcement, Dubuque County Conservation said all existing reservations will be honored and that online reservation at mycountyparks.com will start Monday, May 11th. Other rules include visitors will not be allowed in the campgrounds. Campfires will be limited to campers occupying that campsite. No more than six occupants per campsite unless an immediate family contains more than six. All modern restrooms and shower buildings remain closed. Pit latrines are open. Communal picnic tables and grills are open for use at your own risk. Playgrounds and pavilions remain closed. Swiss Valley Nature Center remains closed. Maquoketa Caves State Park to close over COVID-19. Maquoketa Caves State Park now is closing entirely due to COVID-19 concerns. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources announced Thursday that the state park would close starting today and will remain closed until further notice. Other state parks will remain open. The DNR said the move was made due to current social distancing policies and concerns for visitor health and safety, along continued boardwalks and confined spaces within the caves. The caves at the park previously have been closed due to similar concerns, but the park itself had remained open. Dubuque School District's Reading Initiative receives federal funding. The City of City of Dubuque AmeriCorps Partners in Learning programs will receive $203,761 from the Corporation for National and Community Service. The money will fund 49 AmeriCorps members who will tutor students in kindergarten through third grade who are struggling to read, according to a press release from U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer, Dubuque, Iowa. AmeriCorps Partners in Learning supports Dubuque's campaign for grade level reading initiative with school year and summer tutoring programs. Delaware County Relay for Life event canceled from Manchester. Organizers say the traditional Delaware County Relay for Life will not be held this year. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, organizers announced they will not hold the event that was originally scheduled for June 26th. Instead, alternate plans are being considered to honor cancer survivors and raise funds for American Cancer Society. Additional details will be announced when available. Visit Facebook.com for more information. Jackson County Campgrounds reopen from Cibola. The campgrounds at South Cibola Lake will partially reopen today. The campground will have 12 sites available on a first-come, first-served basis beginning at 8 a.m., according to Jackson County Conservation. The announcement states that the shower building will remain closed. Campsite posts will indicate whether the individual sites are open based on spacing requirements. Spruce Green Campground in Bellevue is closed until further notice, and Hurstville Interpretive Center in Maquoketa will be closed until June 1st. And Galena Performer to host a virtual concert. Galena-based Christian singer and songwriter Charity Roos will host a pair of virtual concerts this weekend. The first will take place at 8 p.m. today from her living room. It can be viewed at tinyurl.com/YCWY7CIB. The second will be 5 p.m. Saturday, May 9th, from Dubuque's Back Pocket Brewery and live streamed through Facebook.com/TuneInDubuque, which hosts two shows per week featuring local talent. For more information, visit www.charityrouse.com. We'll finish out today with a few little pieces I'm picking up here and there. One of importance, though, we have 837 jobless claims in Dubuque County. A total of 837 new unemployment claims were filed by workers in Dubuque County in the week that ended Saturday, according to figures obtained by Greater Dubuque Development Corporation. More than 10,600 such claims have been filed in Dubuque County since March 15th. But the most recent week marked the fourth consecutive one in which the total fell. Over that seven-week span, new claims peaked in the week ending April 4th with 2,718. In the 4 weeks since, the total has been 1,912, 1,028, 948, and 837, respectively. The manufacturing and healthcare social assistance sectors led the way in new claims in the most recent week, with each having 150 according to the figures provided to the Telegraph Herald on Thursday. The retail industry was next with 93 new claims. There were 24,693 new claims filed in Iowa the week ending Saturday. More than 285,000 such claims have been filed since mid-March. About 3.2 million Americans filed initial jobless claims last week, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. About one in five U.S. workers have filed for first-time benefits since the spread of COVID-19 prompted business shutdowns in mid-March. One in five, ladies and gentlemen, 20%. My goodness. I'm going to end with just a few spotted pieces from the large article Rising to the Occasion, which might be of interest to my listeners. The Northeast Iowa School of Music, while in-person music lessons have temporarily been silenced, virtual lessons continue. If you have any children, grandchildren that are involved in that, you can go online, nisom.com. The Dubuque Symphony Orchestra, the ensemble, is hosting a series of Facebook Live mini concerts titled Live from Our Living Room at 7 p.m. Fridays on the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra Facebook page. Each week, a different musician is featured. I think it's easy if you just look up facebook.com/Dubuque Symphony. If you have any children or grandchildren that want to be creative, the Creative Adventure Lab, the organization, has created take and make art kits, including pottery, painting, and such. And they're going to have Creative Adventure Lab instructors, including step-by-step projects on its Facebook page. They're going to have live paint nights, clay at home, all kinds of neat things. I think that might bring us to the end, ladies and gentlemen. And you have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I, Ken, your reader, have been reading from the Friday, May 8th Telegraph Herald. And this reading is sponsored in large part by the Robert Hafer Foundation by way of PACO Community Credit Union. Again, I thank you for listening. And until next week, bye-bye.